Well, good evening. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, this first hour, they're going to be the views of our listeners, because this is Open Line Wednesday, and so our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And I'd sort of like to talk about what's going on in the Middle East, but if you have something you'd like to talk about on a different subject, we'll be glad to do that. Recently, there was a poll. It was one of these telephone polls of maybe 1,000 or 1,200 people, just to find out how the American people feel about various issues. 82% of the American people who were polled said the world is becoming more dangerous for the United States and its people, and 48% say it's much more dangerous. 82% of the people believe the world is becoming much more dangerous. And then, of course, 73% say the United States is not doing a good job as a leader in creating a more peaceful and prosperous world. 34% saying it's done a downright poor job. 68% of the people who are polled believe that the rest of the world sees the United States negatively. 34% saying most people throughout the world look upon the United States very negatively. 61% of the people polled says America's safety from terrorism doesn't depend on success in Iraq, and 70% say its troops should leave within the next 12 months. 19% say they ought to leave right away. 84% of the people polled, of Americans polled, said that initiating military force only when we have the support of our allies should be important to our foreign policy, and 51% of the people said it was very important. The survey was based on a telephone interview with 1,013 adults between February 23rd and March 4th of this year. Well, how do you feel about those things, and how do you feel about what's going on as far as Congress is concerned? Congress, of course, has voted to appropriate $100 billion for the war in Iraq and Afghanistan during the coming year, but will require that the federal government begin pulling our troops out by next March, a year from now. The president has said that if the legislation comes to him in that form, why, he will veto it, and there won't be any money for our troops over there, and our men are going to die, and it's going to be the Democrats' fault because our troops are going to die because they cut off funding. Well, but then the Democrats are saying, well, that the president vetoed the bill. We were quite willing to give him another year to try to see if he can straighten things out. But you know, we want some sort of a promise we're going to get out of there. After all, we've been fighting in Afghanistan for 5.5 years. We've been fighting in Iraq for over 4 years, and we'd won the Second World War in 4 years, defeated both Germany and Japan, and a lot of people think that we should have been able to win this war. I'd like to know what you think about what's going on and what you think we really should be doing as far as the war in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan. And then how do you feel about what's going on in Iran? Certainly there's a lot of saber rattling over there. As you know, there are two aircraft carriers. Actually, there are three aircraft carriers over in the Gulf now. They don't talk about the Boxer Expeditionary Force, but the Boxer Expeditionary Force is there. This is a refurbished aircraft carrier, but certainly the Eisenhower is there, and the John Stennis is there, each one with a 6 or 8 ships right along with it. And then of course, the Nimitz is steaming towards the Persian Gulf at the present time. bringing in thirsty Patriot missiles, which obviously are being brought into Iraq, anticipating there'll be missiles sent in from Iran after an attack. We're actually stationing fighter planes in air bases in Turkey in preparation for an attack on Iran. We're putting tanker planes in Turkey so that they can refuel the long-range bombers, which will be coming in to bomb Iran after an attack. And certainly everybody in Iran is waiting for the attack. Are we going to attack Iran? Is this just an effort to scare them? Is this an effort to destabilize the government there? And what are the implications of an attack on Iran? You know, when you start a war, you never know how a war is going to end. Certainly the vast majority of the American people do not want the war in Iraq or Afghanistan. They'd like to get our troops out. Some people want to give the president more time. Some people want to do something right away. And I don't know anybody, well, there are a few people who I've talked to, who feel that we have to attack Iran to protect Israel. Should we attack Iran to protect Israel? Well, let's go to Tom, who's calling us from Wyoming. And if you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Good, Dan. You?
Doing fine. Have you called before?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
I got a question. I'm not sure what you're talking about tonight, but this has been bothering me for a while. I'm going to go to some strange places here, and I want you to kind of hang with me.
All right.
Okay, it's going to deal with the occult some. And have you ever heard of Ed Leeds Skalman?
No, I haven't.
Have you ever heard of Coral Castle?
Nope.
It's a place that he built back in the early part of the 20th century. And these huge structures that he allegedly constructed all by himself and moved. It gets in the realm of the supernatural, things you talk about a lot.
Okay.
And here's the deal. He doesn't really make, or while he was living, he died in 1951, he didn't really make any references to the occult. However, he was a very perceptive man, and he took prodigious notes, and he left us some writings. And in it, he talks about how he discovered the secrets of how the pyramids were put in place.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of implied that he used these same forces, of course, to build this amazing castle out of just rock, coral.
It's entirely possible because you can levitate things. Hold on.
Right.
Hold just a moment here. Okay, Tom, now what's your point?
This is considered what we call today esoteric knowledge.
Right.
Okay. Now, we could say the same thing about the investigations of science down through the ages. What was formerly esoteric is now common knowledge. Where I'm going with this is, what is so wrong with a man investigating natural phenomena, making observations, recording it, and for us to say that he can't do it, and we can't go any further because it's of the occult nature. It's not well known.
Well, first of all, Tom, these are not natural occurrences. These are people who are tapping into the other dimension. And when you begin tapping into the other dimension, why of course you're contacting demonic forces, and of course there can be terrible consequences for your eternal soul by doing it. So I would suggest that even though this knowledge is there and these forces are there, you don't want to do it, and we really don't want to suggest that people should do it. Anything else?
Yes, I do. I do. It's along the line of science. It's like I said, we have things like electricity that we now accept as common knowledge.
Right.
Magnetism. All these were probably in the realm of the occult.
No, not necessarily. These are natural occurring phenomena, and I think there's nothing wrong with studying natural occurring phenomena. It's when you tap into the supernatural. That is the difference, Tom.
Yeah, and The point, yeah, I know what you're saying, but the point I'm making is that even our modern-based language systems that are behind the investigations that we call science, how do you know that that is not part of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? This is not what God intended. That's what we're doing right now, communicating. is actually a function of the occult.
Well, of course, that is your opinion, but I think you're just getting a little confused. I believe that we're using radio waves. I don't believe radio waves are a cult. I mean, I believe that these are a natural occurring phenomenon. But so I don't really want to confuse the audience. I believe
yeah,
there's a supernatural dimension.
I know what you're saying, Stan.
I believe there's a supernatural dimension,
yeah.
And I think you're getting them all confused. We got a full board, but thanks so much for calling.
Yeah.
Let's
okay.
go to Jack calling from Michigan. Hi, Jack.
Hey, Dr. Stan. The Middle East, more Bilderberg, New World Order, Satanic Secret Society, genocide, police action planning. And I think, like Alex Jones has said many times over, people in their own communities need to circulate petitions to ban the Patriot Act in their own local communities. And perhaps you remember sometime, I think it was last year about this time, one of the Arizona state legislators stated emphatically, adamantly, that they were planning to withhold federal tax money because he didn't think the federal government would fund the construction of the fence on the border. So I would say that it's equally feasible to withhold federal tax money that's funding this illegitimate, fraudulent genocide police action, which, as I understand it, Congress violated their constitutionally mandated duty in declaring war, and I think every one of those congressmen who failed to read the Patriot Act and then went ahead and voted on it likewise violated their fiduciary duty under their constitution.
All right, fine, sir. But unfortunately, what you're doing is confusing. Where a state says we're going to withhold money from the federal government to where the individual does, and of course you refuse to pay your taxes, you're going to go to prison. So what we need to do, rather than have you go to prison, is pay your taxes and then spend your time helping us educate the public about what's going on in the Middle East. How none of this really makes sense if you look at it logically, and if you haven't read my February newsletter, where I simply point out that in Afghanistan, where we've been fighting for 5.5 years, mm-hmm. our boys are fighting the Taliban, who are funded and trained by the ISI, Pakistani Intelligence, that is funded by the Pakistani government, that is funded with your tax dollars. So it's like Vietnam all over again.
Sure.
We have to get people to begin to think and question,
yep.
you know, why Vietnam, yep. why were we funding the Soviets, who were funding the North Vietnamese, who were funding the Viet Cong, who were killing our boys, and then carry it forward to Afghanistan.
Yep.
Jack, our job is to get people to think, not to try withholding funds from the
people. No, what I meant by that, Dr. Stan, was that in that context, it was an Arizona state legislator who was actually proposing that because he feared the federal government would not fulfill their obligation to secure the borders in this time of terror. And that's all he was suggesting.
Right.
Just like here in the state of Michigan, they're getting finally to the issue of repealing the prohibition on prosecuting the infamous pharmaceutical drug establishment for putting their toxic synthetic chemicals on the market without any long-term safety studies.
And I think that would be a very legitimate function of your state government, and I would hope that they'd proceed with it.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, thanks very much for calling.
Thank you, Dr. Smith.
And our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And our major job is to educate the American people and to get them to think. This is one of the big problems today is most people just don't think. So we need to ask them questions. So we need to provide them with certainly rational explanations for what's going on. We must be able to document what we say, and we have to utilize the exciting means we have of communication that we never had before. and that is the Internet and shortwave, which gives us the opportunity to talk to people all across the country. We need to get them away from their television sets. We need them to begin reading books and watching legitimate DVDs. And I will tell you that some of the DVDs that are up on the Internet are loose change. Of course, a lot of our DVDs are up there. But, I mean, I saw one the other day with Rosie O'Donnell up, on the My View program. And she's been very, very seriously criticized for what she said. And I don't like Rosie O'Donnell. But I will tell you what Rosie said about 911. What Rosie said about what's going on over in the Middle East, and it was absolutely correct. And I think that we need to praise her when she does the wrong thing and criticize when she doesn't. But there are a lot of exciting things happening, and more people are waking up. And when somebody as far to the left as Rosie O'Donnell can begin to think, I think there's hope for everybody. So again, our telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and we've got Bart calling from Carmel. Hi, Bart. How are you doing?
Fine, sir. Thank you very much. Yeah, that's very interesting about the Rosie O'Donnell scenario.
Now they're calling her Tokyo Rosie.
Yeah, right. sort of plays into the comment. I have something I've been thinking about lately regarding the Iran situation. This is a very ominous scenario. I have believed, along with many other analysts, that the globalist New World Order have sort of held that war in reserve as an ace up their sleeve to use if they felt it was necessary to advance the globalist agenda. And a while back, I had thought that they would probably hold off on it, but more and more I'm thinking that they may have to have this war. If you think the way the Illuminist globalists think and look at it from their point of view, they may have to have it, and I believe it's for two reasons. And the first reason I believe they may have to have this war is to due to the accelerated pace in the deterioration of the economy, which is picking up pace fairly rapidly. And nothing takes people's minds off a deteriorating economy like a world war. And the second reason I believe they might need to have it is the accelerating pace of the public awakening to the fraudulent nature of the entire scenario, the lies around 9-1-1, the lies around the Iraq war, the corrupt nature of this regime, on and on, you know. And those are the two reasons that I am theorizing, and it's just a theory, I hope I'm wrong, that they may feel they may have to have that war. And, you know, again, I hope I'm wrong, but I think they may have held it as an ace up their sleeve to play when they needed to play it. And you know how they string things along and set up scenarios and then hold it there.
I think your points are very well made, Bart, and I would agree with both of your concepts. One, that the deteriorating financial situation. Two, the increasing awareness on the part of the American people, not only to happening with 9-1-1, but to the absurdity of everything that's going on today, because it doesn't make sense. But I think there are other reasons. I believe that this war has been planned for a very long period of time. And I believe that there is a cosmic timeline, and I believe that this is they're taking it step by step by step.
Absolutely.
If you go back, if you don't take my newsletter, you can get it on the Internet in a few days. The February newsletter goes into the master plan laid out, of course, by Alice Bailey in the books that were channeled to her by her demonic spirit named Joao Kuhl. And there, of course, they talk about how, you know, how Judaism is certainly an outmoded religion, how the Muslims are waiting for the return of the Imam Mahdi, and, of course, how the Christians are totally decadent. And what you want to do is get them all fighting one another in this great final confrontation. And out of the destruction of these three major religions will come the new world religion. And, of course, with that, the coming of the New World Order. We'll be back in just a moment. And under any circumstances, Bart, if you don't take it, why? If you want a free copy, you can call our 800 number, or it will be posted on the internet probably within a week. That's the February Radio Liberty newsletter. I think it gives you an answer to, you know, the absurdity of what's going on today. How do you make any sense out of the position being taken by the leaders of Iran? It just doesn't make sense to almost encourage or invite an attack from the United States. And then on our point of view, why would we want to go to war with Iran? The intelligence agencies say it'll be 5 to 10 years before they're able to develop nuclear weapons. Now, of course, this is not what you're hearing on the Internet all the time, but it's just information. We have information from reliable sources that say 5 to 10 years. So what is the rush? And then, of course, when we certainly can't afford it, we're destroying our military. The Army wants to get out of Iraq because they realize that they destroy the lives of so many of the men who've gone over there. A third of the young men who come home are ill within 3 months. One third of all the, you know, the 1.5 million men who've gone over to fight in this most recent war are ill. They're ill today, and probably none of their lives will ever be the same again. And our military leaders realize that they're very concerned. However, of course, they would appear to be that we are intent upon having some sort of a confrontation with Iran. Well, we can't afford it. We're having to borrow $2 to $3 billion every day to just pay our debts, and we're having to borrow it from other countries. And how long will they continue to finance our military adventures throughout the world? So if you look at what's going on from a logical point of view, it doesn't make sense. If you look at it from a spiritual point of view, as you suggested, then all of these things begin to fall into place. And I hope you'll enjoy reading my February newsletter, and maybe you'll give us a call and let us know what you think about it.
I will. And I had one last question, Dr. Stan. There was a congressman last year, a very courageous congressman, I believe a Democrat, and he went to Iraq and then came back, and he's a veteran himself, and he took a very brave stance. He said, this war is wrong, and it needs to end now.
Yeah, was that Murtha?
Murtha, that's
right,
the one.
Right.
And now, Dr. Stan, this illustrates the power of the globalists. He is recently, I couldn't believe my ears when I saw him on TV advocating a military draft. And now he is suddenly shut up about ending this war, and he's talking about a draft now to provide more cannon fodder for these endless wars. And I think that just illustrates the power of these globalists. They got to him. Who knows how they what sort of technique they used to manipulate him? But they sure got to him, didn't they, Dr. Stan?
I'm afraid that they did. I mean, I think John Murtha, you know, he's he retired as a as a Marine Corps colonel. He fought in, I believe, in certainly in Vietnam, and I don't know about Korea, but he was a wounded a veteran, and certainly he had fought for his country. I believe he's a good American. I believe, he originally supported the war, then he turned against the war, and now he's talking about the draft so we can continue the war. What madness is this? I share your concerns.
The madness seems to increase daily, Dr. Stan. Thank you for keeping us all informed. God bless.
God bless. Now, once you get all those people over there in Carmel, listen to our program, will you?
I will.
Okay, God bless. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Give us a call. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. We're here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And so much of what's going on today doesn't make sense unless you begin looking behind the veil and you realize that this is really a spiritual battle. And there are powerful spiritual and occult forces working behind the scenes, plunging us towards a great conflict in the Middle East. And one reason, of course, Bart had asked about the reasons we were there. I think one reason is because there is a terrible bloodlust on the part of these people. They cherish the idea of millions, perhaps hundreds of billions of lives being destroyed. They certainly say that there are too many people in the world. We're going to have to kill 100 million, 500 million, a billion, 2 billion, 3 billion, 4 billion, 5 billion, 6 billion. There's one gentleman, David Foreman, who says that we should kill everybody in the world except for 75,000 people. 75, this is David Foreman, financed by a great tax-exempt foundations, and Constance Company has referred to him and has the documentation of David Foreman, a leader of the environmental movement, who wants to kill everyone on Earth except for 75,000 people. And people find it so difficult to believe that anybody, any human being, could want to do that. And I would point out that these people have lost their humanity, have lost their allegiance to the human race, because they worship a different god. They dream a different dream. Well, we've got Ray calling from Santa Cruz once again. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hey, Ray, how are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. I wanted to talk about Newt Gingrich.
All right, fine.
Well, from what I know, he plays two sides of the fence. He supported Clinton during the impeachment thing. He was on Clinton's side, you know, during that whole thing, you know.
Right.
And it's very interesting that man just goes back and forth from being a neocon to being Mr. Environmental, environmentally friendly and Earth first. And I think he's a little bit like Al Gore. In a certain way.
Actually, he belonged to the same New Age environmental club that Al Gore did when they were both in Congress together.
Yeah.
Because Al Gore was in the Senate and he was in Congress. But Newt Gingrich is one of the smartest people and the most dangerous people and the vilest people in America today. And those are the good things I can say about
him. Well, you know, he served divorce papers to his wife while she was dying of cancer in the hospital.
Right.
That is the most despicably evil thing. I just can't imagine how wicked that man is. But he is essentially, I think, a follower of Leo Strauss.
Well, he is a neocon. He's also basically very closely affiliated with Alvin and Heidi Toffler and their whole Omega Force. And, of course, I have things that he's written. He's a dedicated New Ager who poses as a conservative, and I would never forget when I was running for Congress back in 1988, and when we were taken back to Washington, D.C., you know, to meet the conservative leaders, they gave us little packets of tapes that Newt Gingrich had made, audio tapes, and I will tell you, he's one of the cleverest talkers. You'd honestly think he was a good American and a good conservative. He is neither one. He is dedicated to the New World Order, the new world leader, and the new world religion.
I think the other thing, too, I was connecting the dots, and Leo Strauss, of course, was the professor at the University of Chicago who tutored Paul Wolfowitz and, I believe, Richard Perle and a number of others. But they're followers of him. You see, they don't believe in any kind of morality at all. They don't believe in right or wrong. They don't believe in God.
Well, they believe, of course, that they're Machiavellians. In fact, there's material that's been put out by people who know about all this, and they refer to the neo-Machiavellians. And if you go back and you study what Leo Strauss taught, he taught them about Plato, and he told his students that Plato always had two messages. One was for the common people, but then there was another message for the elite. And, of course, he was really introducing to this whole concept of dualism and the fact that Plato was part of the mystery religions, as were Aristotle and Socrates and Pythagoras, and it is today. There's certain information that is never told to us common folks. That's why you need to keep listening to Radio Liberty, and we'll be back. Hold on just for a moment.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest for the moment is Ray calling from Santa Cruz, and Ray is raising the question of Leo Strauss. And Leo Strauss is known as the father of the new conservative movement, but he was one of the extremely bright gentlemen who taught at the University of Chicago for many years. But his message was basically that there is an elite, that a certain of the elite will know the secret message, and the rest of them are told an entirely different message. And Leo Strauss taught his students that Plato, even, you know, here we're talking about 350 years before Christ was born, had two messages, one for the common Greek student and the other for the elite. And the message that they passed down was this secret that has been passed down through the ages, you know, certainly by the members of the secret societies. It was passed down from Pythagoras to Socrates to Plato to Aristotle to Alexander the Great, and is being passed down to the elite of today.
Connecting the dots a little bit further, you can go back to Heidegger, who was a Nazi philosopher, and Hannah Arendt, his assistant. They were both fanatical, fascists. And it's interesting when you trace it back. You go back to a man named Carl Schmitt, who was a jurist in the Third Reich, in the early years of the Third Reich, and Helmar Schacht, who was the minister of the economy, I think, in the Third Reich. And they believed that the banking system should be controlled by an elite group of people. That was their whole. That was one of the theories, you know, their ideas, that banking should be controlled by, you know, just a small group of elite people.
In fact, I have a copy of the book that Schacht wrote called The Reflections of the Old Wizard, and he really was. He was the father of the Bank for International Settlement.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a number of other people that who was the guy from? Well, anyway, my name's... I have a hard time with names.
Ray, don't feel bad. Basically, the Nazi movement was simply one modern-day manifestation of this whole world occult movement, and many of the people involved with the Nazi movement were occultists, and that is why, after the Second World War, the CIA brought so many of the Nazis to America and helped 10,000 Klaus Barbie and Adolf Eichmann, Dr. Mengele, Martin Bormann, they were allowed to go to South America. And they were helped and kept there and protected by the American CIA and by British intelligence, MI6.
And, of course, Henry Luce, the...
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Ray calling from Santa Cruz. And Ray was simply talking about the occult influence within the Third Reich. And there was an occult influence within the Third Reich. And there's an occult influence in our government today. And there's an occult influence in the British government and in the Soviet government. And in the Islamic governments over there in the Middle East as well. And until you understand that there is
a
brotherhood of darkness of these occult elements, nothing makes sense. Go ahead, Ray.
Well, one other thing. There was a man named Henry Luce, and he was the... I believe he was the owner of Time magazine.
Right.
He was also a dedicated fascist. I think during the 1920s, they had some of the covers of the Time magazine had pictures of Mussolini on it or something. He was real. He was a real crackpot. Really crazy, and they all were crazy. I think,
but they were
crazy like a fox.
Right.
But Henry Luce is an interesting character, too, in the whole thing. And one of his disciples was Daniel Patrick Moynihan.
I'm not at all surprised. I didn't know that. Yeah. But that wouldn't be at all surprised. These people all interlock, and they believe in an elitist rule of us common folks. And they believe, of course, that they have been chosen to rule, and they're all dedicated to this idea of the New World Order, the New World Religion, the New World Leader. But many of them realized that they would never see it during their lifetime, but they dedicated the whole of their lives in pursuit of this goal.
And, you know, I think they're going to fail.
Well, we're going to find out before very long. We are living at the most exciting, frightening, dangerous time in history. Isn't it a wonderful time to know the Lord?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it truly is.
Okay, anything anyway. Else, Ray, before we let you go?
Oh, that's about it.
Okay, thanks good to hear from you. But your points are well taken,
thanks.
And certainly Leo Strauss is one of the keys
to
unlocking this. If you haven't seen my new talk on the forbidden knowledge, the forbidden secret, we talk about Leo Strauss and the message that he gave to so many of his followers who today are directing the course of our nation.
Yeah.
God bless.
Okay. God bless you, too.
Thanks so much. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And let's go to Bill, who's calling us from Coeur d'Alene. Hi, Bill. How are you doing?
Hello. Good evening, sir. Thank you for everything that you and all the good patriots out there do each day for trying to turn this thing around. But I wanted to mention that a lot of us have worried and concerned ourselves with foreign troops coming here, and I think that's the ultimate plan. They would leave those kids over there just by accident, of course, considering all the lost MIAs and left behinds from how many wars in the past. But worse than that, all their equipment. Every indication from a number of different sources that is ultimately the plan. There's going to be a conference. Greg Evanson, I'm sure that you've read him on newswithviews.com. /Evanson, EVENSEN, /Greg, 2.htm. The Kansas City summit is for the 12th and the 14th of this month. I was hoping that you could get him on. I think that this is going to be pivotal in re-taking the Republic and finally waking everybody up to what is needed as far as these war crimes.
Well, I'm very, very concerned about what's going on. I wish him well, and if you could get him to give me a call, I would very, very seriously consider putting him on, at least hearing what he plans. Who is funding him, though? This is the question I always have, is where is the money coming from for any of these people? Because most of our conservative organizations,
most
of our religious organizations have all been infiltrated. Now, this may be a great guy. He may be independent. He may be really trying to do something. And if he is, I wish him well. And
well,
I even know
most of them. Absolutely right. Thanks so much.
Okay. Thanks very much. Okay, again, our telephone. Are you there, Bill?
Yes, sir, I am.
Go right ahead.
I concur with your concern. I was at the 93 Congress on reflection and review and comparing notes with a number of people from the Kansas City Congress in 93. It was evident that it was totally infiltrated, very well manipulated and managed, and obviously capitalized upon considering what happened to the Missouri 20 and the book that came out, Chautauqua Rising 2006 by Cashel, that was a complete fraud and a sham. Yes, there is a large concern considering the infiltration of all patriot efforts throughout history. It wouldn't be surprising, but your prayers and the prayers of the audience, I will get a message to him as quickly as possible and ask him to be in direct contact with you. But it's newsandviews.com /Evanson, EVENSEN, /Greg, 2.htm.
All right. Thank you very much for calling, Bill.
Are
you going to be going to the meeting?
I'm going to try.
All right. Fine. Well, certainly we need to have some means of coordinating our thoughts and our efforts, but be wary, of course, these people who come in with all sorts of money, and they're your best friends, and they want to help you.
Right.
And they've done such a great job of simply undercutting and destroying our major ministries. And, you know, for instance, somebody was calling earlier about Newt Gingrich. Now, Newt Gingrich is a dedicated New Ager, and yet, of course, Jerry Falwell, who I believe is an honest man. I think he's very, very naive.
Very.
I think he loves the Lord. I think he's done a lot of good through the years. He invited Newt Gingrich, of all people, to come back to be the speaker there, you know, at the graduation ceremonies. to give him a platform, which actually as a basis for his presidential run. We find certainly some of the most prominent conservative evangelical leaders are saying, well, you know, Newt Gingrich certainly is one of the brightest men we have, never pointing out the fact that he is totally unethical, dishonest. I mean, who would want somebody who is a dedicated New Ager, and why are they pushing people like Newt Gingrich instead of constitutionalists like Ron Paul or Tom Tancredo? So I think we have real problems with our Christian leadership. I wish we had Christian leaders who are willing to speak out and speak out strongly on these issues that we talk about.
And it's very, very sad and very telling, that point that you last made about within our own supposed sphere of influence within the broadcast community, Dr. Stan, if you listen closely, there are a couple of them that just are absolutely adamantly against Mr. Ron Paul participating because he can't communicate to the average cow out in the field. But they are very, very well identified as documenting how well they pushed upon the American Christian church community in this country through their program that is broadcast on the same channel that you're being broadcast on here today. That very same family group pushed two oligarchies, one older and one young on this country, two of them. Bush.
All right, well, I think that we got real problems today. But people cannot understand anything unless they understand the spiritual forces that are energizing what's going on today. And our job is, of course, to try to get people to understand that this is not a political struggle. And certainly, I believe that there are several conservatives out there, Ron Paul, Tom Tancredo, who certainly deserve our support. But even if they were to be elected president, unless, of course, the American people are willing to turn from their wicked ways, unless there is a great revival in America, a third great awakening, there's no way we're going to save this country.
It's a matter of prayer. There's no doubt about it.
All right. God bless, and thanks very much for calling, Bill.
Bye-bye, sir.
Okay, fine. Well, our telephone number right now is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. I'd like to know what you think about. Should we be pulling our troops out of Iraq? Or should we give the president a year to straighten things out over there before we require him to actually start pulling the troops out? Or should we perhaps give him as much time as he needs? After all, if we tell him he's got to start pulling the troops out in a year, doesn't that allow the terrorists over there to know that all they have to do is just sit back and not do too much for a year? And then the Americans will leave, and then they can continue their genocidal policies, struggling, of course, to the Shia Muslims trying to kill the Sunnis, and the Sunnis trying to kill Shia Muslims. What should we be doing at this point? Give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and let me know what you think about what we should be doing. Do you support giving President Bush an ultimatum? How do you feel about George Bush vetoing the legislation that has appropriated $100 billion to fund the war for the next year? If he does veto that legislation because it has a time limit, then who's responsible for cutting off funds for our troops? Is it President Bush who vetoed the legislation? Is it the leaders of the Democrat Party who gave him a time limit? I'd like to know what you think. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And simply that the president, just as commander-in-chief, be able to, of course, maintain our troops in Iraq and in Afghanistan as long as he sees fit. And what about going to war with Iran? Should we attack Iran to protect Israel? And if we don't attack Iran, what's going to happen to Israel? Certainly, everything would point to the fact that Iran is providing weapons, missiles, and even ever more sophisticated missiles to both Hezbollah and Hamas in preparation for an attack on Israel in the very near future. And I'm talking about a matter within 3 to 6 months, a massive raining down of missiles on Israel. And this is just a little tiny country. What do you think about 10,000 sophisticated missiles raining down on Israel? Is there any defense? They may have a few Arrow anti-ballistic missiles, but they might even have a few Patriot anti-ballistic missiles. But how would they defend themselves? Certainly their civil defense system is not adequate. Is it possible that they would be able to kill 1 million Israelis or 2 million Israelis? Or what's going to happen to Israel? Will God intervene? Does God care? Is God to bring his judgment upon Israel? I'd like to know what you're thinking about what's going on. And then, of course, as you analyze what's happening there, why, of course, they would not be able to smuggle the missiles into Palestine, to Hamas, and, of course, to the Fatah group without the full support of the Egyptian government. And who is funding the Egyptian government? Why, ladies and gentlemen, your tax money is funding the Egyptian government that is helping Hamas smuggle their missiles into Palestine that will be used against the Israelis. Doesn't make sense. And where, of course, is Iran getting these sophisticated missiles? Why, they're not building them there. They're in a little back room. They're getting them from Russia. And where is Russia getting their technology and funding from? Well, a lot of it's coming from the United States, just as it always has. Well, let's go to Paula, who's calling from Florida. Hi, Paula. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I had a comment.
Go ahead.
I think we need to get out of Iraq, period. I think these people can work out their own problems without us interfering. And, I mean, do you think God would want us being everywhere, killing everybody all the time?
Well, let me ask you a question, Paula. What's going to happen if we pull out? Certainly the Shias are going to slaughter the Sunnis. The Sunnis are going to slaughter the Shias. And since we created this problem, do we bear any responsibility for the consequences of the mess that the Bush administration has made there?
But were they doing this before we got there?
No, they weren't. They had a very stable society.
That's right. And the thing is, the reason they're fighting is because we're there.
Right. No, the reason they're fighting is because they hate one another. They always have. But Sidney, I agree that we should get our troops out of there. But before we do, we ought to do what's logical. We ought to do what the British did back after the First World War, where they took three disparate groups, the Shias, the Sunnis, and the Kurds, and put them in one country. And we ought to allow this country to have one area for the Shias and one area for the Sunnis and one area for the Kurds, and let them have their own independent governments. And certainly all the Sunnis that have to move to the one country and the Shias
exactly.
have to move to the other. But you see, we don't want a solution. We want a problem. That's why we've handled this the way we have.
Well, did you know that Cheney was giving money to the Sunnis?
Oh, I'm sure he is. I'm sure he is. And I'm sure they're giving money to the Shias as well. They're giving money to both sides.
Did you know that they carried over $12 billion over there in cash and were paying off our soldiers to keep their mouths shut?
No, I don't think they gave it to the soldiers. I think that
they gave it to our people.
Well,
matter of fact, they came on the radio and told about it.
All right. Well, I think that the $12 billion has disappeared. I think it's being used for black operations. But thank you so very much, Paula. Anything
okay.
you want to say before we let you go?
No, that's about it.
God bless. Thanks so
God
much.
God bless, son. Bye-bye.
Let's go to Jeff calling from Montana. Nobody knows what happened to the $12 billion. It just sort of disappeared. You know what I mean? Oh, shucks. We're just so incompetent. You know, we just don't know what happened to that $12 billion. But we'll try to do better. Give us some more money. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, do you, Dr. Stan, I just have this gut-level feeling. I always have.
Go ahead. I think we just lost. I don't know what happened to Jeff from Montana. Jeff, if you want to call back, why, we'd be glad to talk to you. But somebody cut you off. It wasn't me. Anyway, Paul calling. Anyway, where are you calling from, Paul?
Unfortunately, it's Ohio.
Okay, go ahead.
The land of the coward, the sheeple, and all that.
Okay, fine.
And I don't know, really. You know, you tell a lie often enough, and the bigger the lie, the more it's believed. I can't believe anything else, but it's for oil. And I don't know, they may well be, you know, $4.5 trillion disappeared out of the treasury, but, gosh, like you say, Dr. Stan, nobody knows what happened to it.
Oh, shucks, yeah, isn't that amazing? Oil is certainly one of the things, but you have to understand it's much bigger than that.
I don't know about the Iran thing. I don't know about what to do about that.
Well, I think that the last thing in the world we want to do is go to war with Iran.
Really?
But I'm very much afraid that we're going to end up going to war with Iran.
Oh.
And I don't know whether it's going to be. A lot of people think it's going to happen this Friday. I don't believe that. I think they're trying to scare us to death. But I think that I believe it's going to happen sooner or later. But I pray for my country when I reflect that God is just, and his justice will not sleep forever. Hang on there for a moment. Well, Paul, we've got just a couple of minutes. Do you have anything else you'd like to say?
Well, all the money's disappearing. The New World Order is supposed to be, I heard on another program today, maybe I listened to too much talk radio, I don't know. They said that 2009 that it'll be in place. They're rushing to get it all into place so they can start it in 2009. And I heard some more about Javier Solano and all that.
You know, who's talking about Javier Solano? Because, of course, that is one of our favorite topics. And I think it's amazing that other people are beginning to write about him. I saw that Joseph Farren was writing about him, and obviously he's listening to our program or listening to Constance Cumby. So, yeah, but Javier certainly is one of the key players in this whole scenario.
I don't know about Iran, but these madmen that are at the helm up there, I don't know what, you know, it's not beyond them to nuke them. They're talking, 19 or 20 tactical nukes on them?
Well, certainly we don't know what they're going to do, Paul. I would hope and pray they do not use nuclear weapons, because if we use nuclear weapons on Iran, we will have opened, the Pandora's box. The genie will be out of the bottle. The toothpaste will be out of the tube, and you're never going to get it back in again. And we will have established the principle that it's all right to launch a preemptive nuclear strike on any country that we want to. And if that's true, then why shouldn't somebody launch a preemptive nuclear strike on the United States? And believe me, certainly the Russians are doing everything they can to trap America into expanding the war in the Middle East. Both Russia and China, instead of going to the United Nations and saying we will not support sanctions being used against Iran, they've supported the United States' effort to use sanctions against Iran, and by so doing have given legitimacy to our effort to go to war. And I've said so many times, and I think it's so true, the Russians and the Chinese would love to fight to the last American soldier in the Middle East, and until the last American aircraft carrier has been sunk in the Gulf. But the question is, who is funding communist China and communist Russia today? All you need to do is read the pages of the Wall Street Journal and find out that American corporations are funding both countries.
I can't believe that they got to use nuclear weapons. They got all them deep space platform weapons up there, the lasers, the pulse weapons, and all that stuff. They got 300, what is it, the satellite, CIA's got hundreds of spy satellites up there. You can't tell me where they don't know where they put those British sailors and so
on. Hold that thought, Paul. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Paul is saying he thinks that there may be a lot of weapons in outer space there, all sorts of sophisticated weapons we've never heard of, and he may be right. Paul, good night. Thanks for calling. God bless you. And, of course, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us as we reach out 5 hours every single day, weekly day, and then on our weekend program as well, trying to educate the American people about the spiritual battle which is behind the political, ideological, cultural struggle that's taking place today. And until you understand that there are spiritual forces that are energizing what's going on, truly supernatural forces. Why, Chris, you're not going to be able to figure out much of what's going on today, because most of what's going on, if you analyze it carefully, just doesn't make sense. If you would like to have more information on how this fits together, certainly my talk, Brotherhood of Darkness, but our latest talk, entitled Forbidden Secret, will, Chris, open up entirely new doors for you. And an understanding of so much of what's going on, we talk about Leo Strauss there, and, of course, the secret that was passed on from Plato to Aristotle to Alexander the Great. And we know, of course, at least what some of that was, because of a book that was written in the first century by Plutarch, who wrote about the conversations, or at least the correspondence, between Alexander the Great and Aristotle concerning the mysteries. And we know about, of course, the information that was bestowed to citizens today by Thomas Jefferson concerning the mysteries. And we have the documentation on so much of this, and it is available through Radio Liberty, and you're just not going to get this discussed any other place. So you'll want to get my talk on The Forbidden Secret. It's available on DVD, or it will be available very soon on video, but you can get the DVDs right now, and that and Brotherhood of Darkness, and then Chris Pinto's two DVDs, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning and Riddles in Stone, and those four DVDs will give you more information than most university professors have, and you really need to understand how this all fits together. Now, of course, if you've never read Professor Quigley's book, which, of course, is the introduction to the secret society that Cecil Rhodes created back in 1891 and documents the foundation of that, and I know it's accurate because I spent many weeks back at Georgetown University going through Professor Quigley's papers there after he died because I wanted to know where he got the information on Cecil Rhodes' secret societies that he writes about on page 950 of his book, a book that was suppressed for so many years. And how do we know it was suppressed? Because we purchased the tape of an interview with Professor Quigley where he tells how his book was suppressed, and that's available with the Tragedy and Hope special or with the Secret Government four-tape set. If you'd like to have information on how to obtain the information we talk about here at Radio Liberty, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like, of course, to get a copy of my February newsletter, which gives you the background of what's really going on in the Middle East today. Why, it'll be, if you subscribe to the newsletter, it'll be going out, I think it went out today. Then, of course, if you do not subscribe, shame on you, but we'll be glad to send you a free copy of the newsletter, or it'll be up on the Internet later this week at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com, where you can listen to our programs 3 hours a day on the Internet, and, of course, we're an hour a day on AmericanNewsNet.com, an hour on GCNLive.com. All of these are available. You can listen to us 5 hours a day on Telstar 5. Well, we don't expect you to listen that much, but we want you to get educated so you can begin to educate others, because our job is to bring people to an understanding of the spiritual forces working behind the scenes, and hopefully to bring people into a close personal relationship with our Lord. Please pray for America, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests. And, well, today we're hoping to have, in fact, we have him on the line right now, Reverend Don Piper. And we're going to be talking about his book, 90 Minutes in Heaven. And it's a very, very powerful, very touching book. We carry the book because, of course, we believe it will help many of our listeners psychologically prepare for what I fear lies ahead. Because it asks the question, why do bad things happen to good people? So, Sydney, I'm going to let Reverend Piper, tell you the story of 90 Minutes in Heaven. It is an amazing story, having less to do with the 90 Minutes in Heaven than of course, what happened to Don as a result of this. But, Don, thank you very much for being with us again.
Well, it's great talking to you again. I'm very honored to be on your program. Thank you very much.
Well, remember now, because this is an entirely different audience, so you can don't have to worry about being repetitive.
Sure.
Most of the people here have never heard your story, so why don't you just pick the story up and you tell it, and I'll just sort of sit here and listen.
Well, in 1989, I was coming home from a church conference as a pastor. You know, attend periodic conferences. I always felt like when you're through learning, you're through. So, you go to conferences and pick up some new ideas. I went to this conference. On the way home from the conference, in a rural area, because the conference center was in a rural area, I was trying to cross a bridge, a narrow two-lane bridge, and the tractor-trailer truck, an 18-wheeler, crossed the center stripe and hit my small car head-on without any warning. I had no opportunity to get out of the way. I didn't even see the truck coming. It all happened so fast. And I was a fatality in the accident, and of course we're having this conversation on the phone, so something must have happened for me to survive the accident, even though it was a head-on, really a horrible collision with a truck. And
that's
actually, the story.
The emergency personnel all considered you were dead.
Right. It was multiple car accident, three cars and the one big truck, and. Even though it was a rural area, they dispatched several ambulances out to the scene with all the medical personnel on board. They examined everybody. Thankfully, everybody was not injured except me. Everyone else was just taken away in other cars. And I was, by four different sets of emergency medical technicians, declared dead on the scene and literally covered up with a tarp because all the windows had been knocked out of the car and it was raining inside the car on the body. So they left me there and waited for a county official to come to the scene to sign the paperwork so the body could be removed to a mortuary.
All right. In fact, they had difficulty. Couldn't even get you out of the car. Wasn't it that your legs were pretty well trapped?
Yes. The collision with the truck literally went over the top of the car with the nine wheels on the driver's side of the truck, and it just kind of crushed the car, shoved it up against the railing of the bridge, and left me there in the car dead. So they had a lot of trouble getting me out of the car because it was wrapped around me.
All right, fine. Of course, there you are. You're covered with this tarp. You've been declared dead. And,
yes.
And so let's talk a little bit about what you experienced at that time, because that is the title of the book,
right?
90 Minutes in Heaven.
Right. I immediately, upon impact, was transported to the very gates of heaven, and I heard people talk about such things before, never a skeptic about the reality of heaven, because I've been preaching it for 20 years when the accident happened, but I was very skeptical that you could go there and come back and talk about it, and I really didn't have a near-death experience. I was dead for 90 minutes, so that's not nearly dead, so I got to see heaven.
Hold that thought, we'll be back in just
sure.
A all right, pick up the story there, please.
Well, I just was immediately standing at the gates of heaven, surrounded by people who I had known and loved in life, and they all were surrounding me. These are people who I didn't have what you would call a Christian upbringing. My family were good folks, and they periodically attended church, but if I went to church, it was I'd depend on somebody else to take me, And so many of the people who had that kind of influence on me, they were people who had told me about Christ, who'd seen that I got to church, called me when I didn't go, and all those people were gathered at the gates to receive me, a welcoming committee, if you will, and they all looked wonderful. They were perfect, and I was so glad. When I saw them, I knew where I was because I knew where they were after they had passed away. I knew they went to heaven, and there they were at the gates to greet me, and they looked magnificent. If you want to look good, heaven is obviously the place you want to be because everybody looks good up there.
All right, fine. And, of course, did you ever get through the gates into heaven?
I was going through the gates, and the gates themselves are quite magnificent. They look like they were sculpted out of the inside of an oyster. It's like what I would call mother of pearl. They really literally are pearly gates, and there really are streets of gold going inside. And I was actually, after hearing this magnificent music and incredible greeting by angels that were hovering all about us, I was actually going through the gates and seeing what was on the inside, which are some magnificent structures and really an infinitely bright light that crests this this hill, kind of between a hill and a mountain. And that's where I had my eyes fixed because I know that's where the Lord was, high and lifted up. I'm going through the gates, and at that time, back on Earth, there are people. A lot of people are praying for me because they don't know that I've been killed. All they know is that I've been in a really bad accident. One man knows that I'm a fatality, and he's just been directed by God to get in the car and pray for me, which he does. He's praying over me, and he's singing the great old hymn, What a Friend We Have in Jesus. I'm actually at the gates of heaven. At least he's singing it over my body back in the car. I'm going through the gates of heaven simultaneously. 90 minutes after the truck hit me, he's singing that hymn over my body in the car, under the tarp in the dark, even though it's the middle of the day. Thousands of people are praying for me around the world because they've been told I was in a bad accident, but they don't know I'm dead. All this prayer is being lifted up to heaven. I'm going through the gates of heaven, and suddenly, without any warning, I start singing with that man in the car, in the dark, and he just is completely shocked and gets out of the car very quickly.
Hold on, though, just a moment. We'll be right back here.
Sure.
With Don Piper. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest is Don Piper, and we're talking about what happened, and he's dead. He's been pronounced dead. He's covered up with a tarp. He goes to heaven. He sees a beautiful place. He's about to enter into the gates of heaven. Where, down in the car, he's a minister.
Yes.
Didn't know him. Didn't know Don at all. No. But he was just called to go to the car and pray. And everybody said, the guy is dead. What do you want to pray
right.
for? And he really had a feeling he had to pray for you, didn't he?
Well, it's quite a remarkable story. In fact, just this week, I met his widow, Anita. Anita and Dick Onorecker were the couple, the pastor and his wife, who were returning also home from the same conference, even though we did not know each other. We had not met at the conference. And he was behind me in the accident. His car was. He and his wife came up to the accident, and he just felt God spoke to him and said, pray for the man in the red car, which was me, of course. And he got in that car and began to pray for me. And the remarkable thing about it is that that's not something he would have normally done as a seminary-educated minister. Praying for dead people just did not, that was not included in his theology. But God told him to do it that day, and so he set his theology aside and was obedient, which is a rather remarkable turn of events. Anita and I were talking about this that week. But he was that kind of fellow. If God told him to do something, it didn't really matter whether it made sense to him or not. He knew it was the voice of the Lord, and he was obedient. And there's a real lesson there for us. It's not whether it makes sense to us or not. It's whether God's in it. And so he did. He got in the car and prayed for me. And 90 minutes after he started doing that, I returned. I was alive, and his life was changed as well as mine.
And so, of course, then they come with the jaws of life, and they
yes.
catch you out, and, of course, then now they're going to take you to the hospital. But, of course, you've got terrible, terrible injuries. So
I did, yeah.
Why don't you tell the story?
Well, the impact was just so cataclysmic that my head was crushed by the weight of the truck rolling over the roof of the car, and it just my heart had stopped beating. So even though I had blood coming out of the ears and eyes and nose and places like that, it had dried because the heart was no longer beating. And I was kind of impaled on the steering wheel. The round part of the wheel came off, and the shaft of the steering wheel entered my chest. The dashboard came across both of my legs because of the weight of the truck coming over the hood. My right leg was crushed at the knee. My left leg crushed just above the knee. And as a result of that, it just it was like a guillotine that just severed the leg right above the left knee, and 4 inches of the femur, which, of course, the largest bone in the human body, was just ejected out of the car and never found. The right arm was not broken. It's the only thing I did not break. But the left arm was dislocated at the shoulder. It went over my back into the back seat. And the forearm, from about halfway between the wrist and the elbow, was all the bones were removed or broken, crushed, ejected. And that part of my arm from the midpoint of the forearm down was actually lying in the back seat of the car. So the injuries were absolutely devastating. Open, gaping wounds, many, many broken bones. It was a bloodbath in the car, horrible scene, and easy to understand why I did not survive the accident initially. But God obviously had another purpose, because not only did I return from that accident, but after 13 months in a hospital bed and 34 major operations, I did something they said I would never do, and that is walk again and use my left arm. And to this day, I still have them. They're not in great shape, but they're originals, and my anatomy has been kind of completely rearranged. But I did walk into where the building I'm in right now, and I'm going to walk out of here when I'm finished.
And, of course, basically, then they transported you to a hospital, then they took you to a larger center, and this must have been a very painful experience for
it
you.
It was a difficult experience. I by that time, of course, I initially was in shock, and I went to a clinic and then a hospital, and they said there's just not anything we can do to him. We've got to transport him to a trauma center, and that was about 60 or 70 miles away. The weather was so inclement that day they could not fly the Life Flight helicopters, so they actually had to transport me by land 65 miles away. It was a harrowing ride in that ambulance at high speed because I was in such grave condition. It was at that point that the shock had worn off and the pain began to set in. And every time my heart would beat, there was just excruciating pain at every one of those broken bone sites, and there were many of them. I don't know that I have ever experienced before or since anything quite as devastating. I asked for more pain medications, and they told me they couldn't give me any more because they didn't want me to lose consciousness. They were afraid that if they did, I would never be able to regain consciousness. And so I just kind of lay there in excruciating pain. I finally asked the emergency medical technician if he couldn't give me anything for pain, could he at least make the other people, and I assume they were other injured people in this massive wreck, if it could make the other people in the ambulance be quieter, because the screams and the moans were really very disturbing. And he put his hand on my shoulder, I'll never forget this, and he said, "Sir, there are no other people in this ambulance. Those sounds, those screams, those are coming from you." And it's probably the most frightened I've ever been in my life, to realize that I was so badly hurt and so in such enormous pain that I was not even conscious of the fact that I was screaming and that I was making those moaning sounds. Very disturbing.
Well, anyway, of course, they get you to the hospital, and, of course, they get you into traction. And,
yes.
And the doctors are really in a terrible situation.
Yes.
Because, of course, they've got one leg. It's got four inches of your feet.
Yes.
And, what do you do when you got a leg and 4 inches the bone is gone? And
that's
I'm
right.
Sure, there was a question about taking off the leg, was
there? There was, and unfortunately, very soon into this this time in the ICU, as they were trying to really determine a game plan for saving both limbs, the arm and the leg, I developed pneumonia in both lungs. And so I was in, once again, critical condition. One night, 6 days after the accident, they summoned my wife into the room and said, "Mrs. Piper, you have a very difficult but a very simple choice to make. we're either going to have to remove your husband's leg tonight, because if we don't, we're not able to elevate him to do breathing treatments and the things that we need to do to take care of his pneumonia. He's going to end up dying of the pneumonia unless we either take the leg off so he can be elevated, or we perform a very experimental treatment at this time called a bone growth device. It's an external fixator called an Elizaroff. And she had to make a decision as to whether to put that on. No, only five had ever been applied in the United States up to that point on femurs. And so she decided to try that. Obviously, I was not consulted because I was not in condition to make any decisions. And so she did that. I woke up the next morning with a device embedded in my leg, 30 puncture wounds that went through the flesh, through the bone, and out the other side. And I was to wear that for 11 months. And it was a very difficult, trying time. But the other side of it is that it works. She just had to make that decision that would affect our lives for the rest of our lives. And it's a very courageous lady. She's the hero of my story.
Well, anyway, of course, you put on this Elizaroff, and of course, I'm acquainted with that because, as you know, I'm an orthopedic surgeon, and although I never pulled one on, I read about this. It was developed by a Russian orthopedist and as a means of lengthening the bone. Of course, yours, it was just preserving the alignment and then letting the bone eventually fill in. So you wore this thing for 11 months.
That's right.
And that must have been a terribly tedious and painful time for you.
It is. It's an extraordinarily difficult thing. I have one all on my arm as well, the left arm, but only for about 6 months on the arm, because they did actually bone transplants in the arm. Those bones are small enough that there's some comparable areas, including the pelvis. They were able to harvest bones and put in the arm, and they were able to keep that length of time down to a shorter period of time. The leg, they actually turn screws on the leg four times a day, every 6 hours, and stretch the bones that are inside the leg after having broken it again above where the initial break was, and they stretch the bones to close the gap where the bone is missing. It's quite ingenious, but as you might imagine, dragging a series of pins and wires through your legs by turning screws is quite a painful experience, in addition to all those open wounds where the wires and the pins go. You have to pour hydrogen peroxide into those wounds every day to kind of keep the chances of infection down, because even after having this on your leg for such a long period of time, you could still lose the leg by getting an infection in any of those open wounds. So it's a very tedious, long, drawn-out, painful process. The good news is that it worked, and I'm walking on that leg today.
Well, because the interesting thing of you is you tell the story of what happened. And, of course, your emotional response to this, your anger, your frustration.
Yeah.
I mean, why should this happen to me?
Right. I had a difficult time with it. I guess one of the things that people have found appealing about the book is that it's an unvarnished book. They may have bought it to read. I never hand the book to somebody and say, "I hope you enjoy this." It's a painful experience. It was difficult for me. I probably didn't handle it as well as I could have. At least I think so. I became very depressed because the doctors, in spite of their best efforts, could not really guarantee that it was going to work, and they didn't know how long it would take to work. So you can imagine day after day, week after week, month after month of having no good news, it began to wear on me. I became very depressed. They tried to help me, and I didn't really want any help. I figured I'd just kind of suffer silently and get over it someday. So I wasn't really good at this. I had a tough time trying to make the adjustment and get some hope. I was looking for hope.
And, of course, one of the stories you tell about how people would try to help you and you didn't want them to help
No.
you.
No, I didn't. I thought I was relieving them of the responsibility. I thought I was being selfless, and the truth is I was being selfish by denying them of the opportunity to bless me, which is really what they wanted to do. They wanted to help me, and I wouldn't take their help.
All right, fine. We're going to be back in just a few moments with Don Piper. Well, Don, why don't you go ahead and tell the story of this minister friend of yours who was there to counsel you and try to get you through this such difficult period.
Well, you know, I don't want to be, I mean, make it sound disingenuous or anything, but if you could find a friend who's an 80-year-old retired pastor, find one, because they're great. They're great, great people. And I was fortunate enough to have a gentleman in my life like that. His name was J.B. Perkins, and he was just a great gentleman who had spent his entire life devoted to helping other people, and I loved him very much. He would come and see me, and it was a 40-mile one-way drive to the hospital. He would come see me at least two or three times a week, so it was a real commitment for him to have to do this. But he was always faithful, and he always had a good word. But by this time, I was not doing very well mentally and emotionally, and he knew that. But one day, he observed me being not brusque, but borderline. Somebody had come to say, you know, can I get you something before I leave? Can I get you a magazine or something like that? And I said, no, I'm fine. Thank you. Thank you for coming. And I'm sure it must have come across as not being very insincere. So that person left, and J.B. Perkins came over to my bed, and he said, you need to get your act together. And I was so caught off guard by him saying that. I said, sir, I don't know what you're talking about. He said, you're doing a terrible job of letting people take care of you. Which I did respond to that. I said, I don't want people to take care of me. I really wish they'd all go away, and then I could suddenly somehow get over this so they wouldn't have to worry about me. He says, but they want to take care of you. It's all they have. If they could trade places with you, they'd do that. They care about you that much. But you're denying them a blessing. Well, I'd heard that before, but it didn't really register with me. And he really began to kind of get to me as he was talking about, you've spent your entire life ministering to other people. Why is it that when you need them, you won't let them minister to you? And I didn't have a good answer for that. My first response was I was kind of taken aback. He was kind of lecturing me, and I wasn't used to being lectured like that. But he made me promise before he left that I would try to do a better job of letting people care for me because it's the only gift they had to offer. They couldn't heal me. They couldn't. You know, all they could do is try to make my life, the quality of life, a little bit better. So I promised him that I would do it, but I didn't really want to. But as I began to do that, I began to see how right he was. These people really did. It was their way of saying, we care about you. And it might have just been bringing a magazine from the gift shop downstairs or bring me a milkshake because I lost 80 pounds. You know, they were just trying to do something nice. And it made them feel better. It made them feel worthwhile, like they were making a contribution to my recovery. That's one of the best lessons I learned from this experience. I had to get hit by a big truck to figure it out, but you know, ministers and men in particular, I think we don't always do a great job of letting people love us back. And when I began to let people love me back, it really did change them, and it changed me too. So it was a wonderful lesson to learn. I'm still working on it. You know, I'm a work in progress, but it began in the hospital with J.B. Perkins looking at me and saying, you are a hypocrite, he said. You want to help other people, but you won't let them help you.
And certainly your book is just so frankly honest. You know, the imperfections, we're all imperfect.
Yes.
I can see in many of the things you describe my own imperfections, and perhaps I think that the one reason you're a book is so fantastically successful, as you're so brutally honest about your own shortcomings.
Yes.
I wish we could all be that honest. Hold that thought. We'll be right back here.
Yes.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly, then, of course, this is very difficult for your family. Your wife has got to go to work, and you want to talk a little bit about the personal problems you have, because, I mean, this is a devastating financial situation and a crushing blow to you and your family as well.
Well, it was. Even though the church continued to pay my salary, when they certainly weren't in any way obligated to do so, because I was not able to work. Just the sheer logistics of staying in the hospital and having people come and see me and have my wife come up every day, the parking rates and the travel back and forth. We had three children, and they weren't able to stay at home, of course. One was in the middle school, and she actually went to live with one of the high school football coaches and his wife because they had a daughter her age. Our two sons, twin sons, were 8 years old. They had to be taken to a grandparent's house 250 miles away so that they could be taken to school every day and have some semblance of a normal life. My wife, who is a teacher, ran out of all of her sick days, her time off days, you know, everything she had, she was threatened with termination. They weren't trying to be mean. I mean, they just were trying to obey the rules. Other teachers donated their days off. She ran out of those, and finally she just had to go to work. So the church organized something they cleverly referred to as the Dawn Patrol, D-O-N, not D-A-W-N, Dawn Patrol, and they came every day after I was eventually taken home from the hospital. They constructed a hospital room in my home, complete with bed and trapeze and all the different things that you have to have in a hospital room. They came every day for about 4 or 5 hours and sat with me, prepared a meal for me while she went to school and taught. So our life was completely chaos for nearly a year before we found any semblance of normalcy again. And so it was the sacrifice of all those people. I can remember lying in the hospital bed at home, looking out the window of the patio, and I could see high school boys out there mowing the lawn. They would just drive by the house and saw that it needed to be mowed. They'd go home and get their mower, come out and mow the lawn. Tears would just roll down my cheeks as I saw them out there because they knew I couldn't do it. My children were all gone somewhere else. They never thought twice about it. They just did it. So it was an enormous learning experience. It was an incredible testimony of love and devotion that these people who had prayed for me to live now were having to actually put feet to their prayers. They were having to do something to help us. So it was a wonderful, wonderful time. I don't recommend going through these kinds of things, but, you know, your listeners, many of them are going through these kinds of things, difficult, painful experiences, losses, tragedies, circumstances. And it's really not the tragedy so much. It's how we deal with it, how we process it, how we make it through to the other side. So that's what the book is about. I guess that's why people have seemed to have found it so appealing.
And, of course, you simply, you're laying there here. You got both legs. And,
yes.
And, now, what do they have? You have the device on one side. What's on the other side? How are they immobilized the other
I had a cast. It was just a cast,
You already have one arm, and of course, you got the other arm's casted, and then one leg in a cast, the other in this.
The other arm had a fixator in it, but it also, the other arm, during the first 5 or 6 months, was actually lined with IVs. So it, even though it didn't break the right arm, it was immobilized because I had IVs in it, and I could, of course, couldn't be moved from one place to the other without dragging those with me. So for all practical purposes, all four limbs were not useful at all. I was completely, utterly, totally incapacitated. I could not do anything for myself.
And really, what a terrible, terrible situation to be in. And, you know, of course, I've taken care of people, but, you know, I can't think of anybody being laid up that long a time, especially a younger person.
Yeah, I was just 39, or 38, actually, when the accident happened. So it was, what many of us would call, the prime of life, hardly ever be more healthy and virile and full of energy. And I was just completely, I couldn't do anything, nothing, absolutely nothing.
And so you're laying there, and all you can do, of course, is just wait. And it's, the weeks move into months, and the months, of course, it's, how long is it is before you're finally able to get the brace off your leg and at least try standing up?
It was probably 8 months before I was able to be elevated to a kind of a horizontal position again because I had been so long, my equilibrium rearranged itself. So learning to stand, just stand up was quite a challenge. And then several more months after that, it was almost 2 years after the initial impact that I finished most of the therapy. I was able to walk with only a cane, and then eventually, about 2.5 years later, walk unassisted totally.
And of course, I'm sure that many people read this book, and of course, really, I think the reason the book is so successful is because of the impact that you were able to have on other people's lives.
Well, I...
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Go right ahead there.
I think probably one of the decision I made when I was at my lowest point and that was one morning at 3 o'clock in the morning in a hospital bed when I just really had kind of hit the wall. I didn't really know whether I was going to be able to go on. I didn't know where this was going to wind up. I didn't. No one could give me any definitive answers about essentially anything. And I just hit the bottom. And I've said on many occasions, there's only really one good thing that can happen when you hit the bottom, and that is push off. At least when you're on the bottom, you can push off. And I just had to do that. I had to decide that morning that I was not going to be. I just wasn't going to be defeated by this. Since I couldn't find anybody who identified with me, I couldn't find anybody who had lost 4 inches of femur like this and worn one of these devices, and it's because no one had in the country, a handful of people, and I didn't know who they were. I decided I was going to be the go-to person on that, take the emphasis off myself, and try to make sense out of what had happened to me. I felt like if I could help someone else get through this, then maybe it would help me get through it eventually, and maybe process the pain and the depression and all the things that I went through. When I got out, I began to look for opportunities, and I didn't have to look very far. I mean, they began to come in avalanches, and they still do to this day. So I look forward to being a person who's a resource person for folks that have really suffered, struggled, and had a difficult time. And in the past few months, I mean, I'm going in just a few weeks to Enterprise, Alabama, to speak to the high school where those 8 young people were killed by the tornado just a few weeks ago. I flew to Lexington, Kentucky to meet the pilot of the Comair flight that crashed there last year. He is the sole survivor of the airplane. 49 people tragically perished in that accident. He survived. I went to see him. He lost one of his legs and was horribly injured. So I just really... I know now why I had to go through what I did, and it's because I could try to help other people go through the similar experiences. I've been knocked down, but I haven't been knocked out. I've been beaten up, but I haven't been beaten, and neither have the people listening. They've been through some terrible, difficult times, but I think if we take the focus off of us and put it on what God can do through this experience, then we begin to make sense out of it. That makes sense out of the verse that's of the Bible that says, all things work together for good for them that love the Lord. And even though some things don't seem very good at the time they're happening, they could still be used by God to minister to other people, and that's what I want to do. I want to create that new normal for other people.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Don Piper. His book, 90 Minutes in Heaven. And we carry the book. We think it's a very important book. And the reason we think it's important is because we want to prepare people for the very possibility, the very real possibility, that we, many of us, are going to face very difficult times ahead of time. And you have to ask yourself, why would God allow such a terrible thing to happen to a good person? And certainly, Don was a minister and practicing. Been a minister for 20 years and preaching and helping people, and suddenly he faces this terribly devastating experience. And of course, the book recounts so many of the stories of how then, after he was able to get up and around again, he was able to just reach out to people. I remember you telling this one story about you were being at a theater and seeing some young fellow wearing one of these external support devices. What do you want to tell that story? I thought it was really so touching and apropos.
You're referring to the young man I met at the big conference?
Right. Well, yes. You had to go up the stairs to get...
I did, yes. I was taking a group of young people to a large conference in a very large church, and circumstances would happen, we got a very late start because... one of the young ladies got there late, so I was kind of not very happy about that. We got in the bus, and we got to the place, and we unloaded. And when we got in, they had closed all the elevators because I guess people were maybe abusing them or something, and you had to climb steps. I was not long out of leg braces by that time, so I was not climbing stairs very well. I still don't. I probably had to climb 100 to 120 steps to get up to where the only remaining seating was left, and that was because we were so late. And kind of fuming all the way up there about the steps. And when I got up there, I looked over a couple of sections, and I was leaning against the wall. I was so out of breath, I couldn't even sit in a chair. And there was a young man with one of these devices on his leg. And my heart just went out to him. He's had his face buried in his hands. And this was a very uplifting conference. People were waving their arms and they were singing songs. And it was just a great celebration. Well, he was not celebrating at all. I walked over there a couple of three sections over from where my young people were seated and put my hand on his shoulder, and I said, I know that thing on your leg hurts. And he looked up at me as if to say, well, that's about the most obvious. I mean, of course it hurts. It's awful. And he said, yes, sir. And I said, well, I know because I had one on my leg. Well, his demeanor changed immediately. He said, you did? And I said, yeah, I did. And he said, I don't think I'm going to be able to make it through this. And I said, well, I know you don't think you're going to be able to make it through it, and you will probably think that a lot, but you will. He said, well, how? And I said, well, it's going to be a day of a time experience, and you're going to have to believe that when it's all over with, you're going to be able to walk again. He says, I don't know if that's true. I said, I didn't either. I really didn't either. I said, but I promise you, you found somebody who knows how you feel. He says, you're the first person. I said, I know that. I said, we're a small fraternity of people, thankfully, who've had to go through this. I know how you feel. I know how you hurt. I said, I'm going to give you my phone number. You call me 24 hours a day. When you hit the wall and you don't think you could take it anymore, you want to scream, you want to take some wrenches and take that thing off your leg, you just call me up and we'll visit some. I'll pray with you. I'll listen to your gripes or your moans or whatever you got. I said, you found a friend now who understands how you feel. Well, he began to weep. I put my arms around him. He was 17 years old. And I prayed for him, and I said, now, when I get finished, I want you to watch what I'm going to do. He said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to walk right back over there where my young people are seated, and I want you to watch me walk, because one of these days I think you're going to do the same thing. He hugged me one more time, and then I walked with great determination, because I wasn't walking very well, but I at least tried to walk very well that day. And I walked back over, and I turned around and waved at him, and he waved back at me. And we formed a relationship. He began to call me every 2 or 3 weeks when he was just feeling down. And now that young man is out of high school and out of college and doing just fine. But during that time, it was a very difficult time for him. And I know it was difficult because I felt that way myself. So God's given me opportunities like that, and I look forward to it.
And, of course, there have been lots of them impacting on people's lives because of this terrible thing that has happened to you.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, you know, it's not what, as I said, it's not what happens to us, because if we live long enough, and I'm not trying, this is not pessimistic, it's realistic. You know, sooner or later, we're going to lose loved ones, we're going to have a crisis. My writing partner who helped me write the book, is one of the dearest friends I have on earth. His house burned to the ground earlier this year, and in that house was his son-in-law perished. Cecil Murphy is the man's name. His name's on the front of the book because he helped me write the book. Well, I mean, what an awful experience to go through. And yet, I talked to him just a couple of 2-3 days ago, and he's going to rebuild his house, and they have a scholarship established for his son. He's taken this awful experience that he's gone through, and he's finding a new normal through that. And nobody knows better than he, because he and I sat down and wrote this book together. So bad things do happen to good people, people doing the right thing, not in the wrong place at the wrong time. And it's not that they do happen, they do. It's how do we process them? What do we do with those to God's glory and our good? And that's what it's all about.
Amen to that. And, Chris, this is really a very, very inspirational book. And I know it had a tremendous impact upon my wife, and it had a tremendous impact upon me, partly because, of course, I could empathize with Don, because I put many of the similar devices on many of my patients.
Yes.
but, of course, I fortunately never had to go through anything as he's had to go through, and yet he has impacted on so many people's lives because of this experience. How many copies of your book are out now?
Well, the 90 Minutes in Heaven book, the first book, is now a little over 1.6 million copies. In the regular edition, it's in 20 different languages, so I can't really account so far for how many copies it's sold worldwide. And it's also available in a 5-CD version for people who are unsighted or need other help because they're not able to read the book. It's in a large print version. And then Cece and I have also written a follow-up book called Daily Devotions, inspired by 90 Minutes in Heaven. It's 90 stories for help and healing. And a lot of the stories that have happened since the writing of 90 Minutes in Heaven, which are quite remarkable, in some cases even more remarkable than the ones that are in the first book, we've included in this next book, and it's been very well received. It's published by Penguin Putnam, Berkeley Praise, as opposed to the first book, which is Fleming Ravel. And then we have a new book coming out in August, which is about the new normal I spoke of earlier, how to have a meaningful life after tragedy and loss, and it's called Heaven is Real. And I'm really excited about this book. This is the book I always wanted to write about how to get past losses and heartbreaks and tragedies and the difficulties. And that book will be out in August of this year, 2007.
And of course, I think the book is important because it will impact on anybody who reads it. And when you wrote the book, you really didn't anticipate it would have this sort of a phenomenal response.
No.
In fact,
no, not at all. I often said when I wrote the book originally, I knew I could probably count on my mother to buy a copy, and I thought maybe my church members would buy a copy. And the first run was only 6,000 copies. And I thought, well, boy, if we can sell these, this will be great. Otherwise, I'll be storing them in the garage for the rest of my life. And now it's sold, 1,600,000 copies. And they anticipate by the end of this year, it will go over 2 million copies. So God had another plan. The company calls it, instead of calling it 90 Minutes in Heaven, they call it 90 Minutes in Inventory because it just keeps selling. But people are looking for hope. They want to know that we can have that heaven is real, and I know it is because I saw it. And they want to know that you can have a meaningful life between now and heaven. And you can, because Jesus said he came that we might have life abundantly. And we may not be free from pain or tragedy or loss or difficulty, but we need not be defeated. We don't have to be defeated by it. And that's where I think the crux is. I think that's where the strength is. And so I want to offer hope because Jesus offered hope.
Well, would you like to get your web page and your telephone number up? Because I understand you go all over the world talking to.
I do. I'm actually right now in Hawaii, and I will be preaching 5 times this week in Hawaii at the various different places. So this is what I do. Once again, I never planned to do this. I was serving a local church and would have been contented to do that until either Jesus came or he took me home the final time. But in a very real sense, I do travel now and share the 90 Minutes in Heaven story in person. I guess there's something about seeing me walk in and knowing what I went through that kind of encourages folks, because I do walk in, and even though I've just, they told me I never walk again, the doctors and nurses and medical people work some miracles, and God did too, and so I'm able to do that. My website is donpiperministries.com. That's plural, donpiperministries.com. The book is, there's a good website called 90minutesinheaven.com, and it's a kind of an interactive streaming video of some interviews with me and shows the book and things like that. And then, as I said, the other book, the new book, Daily Devotions, is actually on the Penguin Putnam label. And that's you can find that also by getting on Penguin USA.com, and then that's the new book will also be on that too. So I'd love to hear from folks. We have a prayer chain, and we pray for folks in need, and anything we can do to try to help people. I think that's why I'm still here, and I'm going to keep doing it until he takes me home.
Well, I think it's Chris changed your whole ministry.
Yes.
Because I'm sure that you, a book with a distributing 1.6 million copies and then in other languages and going
yes.
towards 2 million is going to have an impact. And ladies and gentlemen, when you read this book, it'll have an impact on you, I promise you. I don't think you can read this book without it having a lasting impression. And yet, it was never intended to do that. It was simply to record the story of what had happened.
Yes.
But I believe God has used this book, and is certainly using your ministry to touch people all over our country, because most people today are getting increasingly cynical. Most people have sort of a feeling of hopelessness, and yet, of course, I think your book gives them a cause for hope.
Well, they do. you know, it's a difficult world in which we live, and because of the information explosion that we have, we are exposed to so many more tragic and painful things on the nightly news and in the front of the papers and on the internet. And if you just kind of sat there and read it and took it all in for a while, I mean, it's a wonder people don't live in a continual state of depression. It's not very hopeful. But we know we're not of this world. There is a better world than this, and that's what Jesus said when he said, I go to prepare a place for you. And but we're here for a reason, and we have to find that reason. It's not a secret. God wants us to know what it is. And when we find it and we do it, and, you know, you meet people who are doing what God made them to do, you can see how happy and contented they are. Doesn't mean they're free from loss or difficulty, but you can see in their lives that they're really doing what God made them to do. I think that's what we're here for. We need to find that and do it. I feel like I'm doing it because this is not what I planned to do. I couldn't be further away from what I had planned to do and laid out for myself, and that tells me that I must be in the center of God's will because I'm not doing what my will. I didn't do what I particularly wanted or planned to do, but I've never been more fulfilled and excited. I'm a little weary most of the time, but it's okay. I'm going to do it as long as I am physically able to do it, and it's very humbling and very overwhelming, very exciting, but it makes a little more sense now that I went through all that stuff, very difficult stuff, because it helps me now help other people through the same thing.
Yeah, of course. Don's son works with him and does his scheduling.
Yes.
And he's really, you're really on the, certainly out most of the time in other communities, aren't you, giving talks?
Well, this year, I'll be in 29 states in the U.S., and then also I'll be back in the U.K. and probably in Sweden later on this year. And the book has been very successful in Scandinavia, so I've been able to preach probably 30 or 40 times in Sweden and Norway and the Netherlands. I've preached across the U.K. I've preached at a big church in Mexico City and several places in Canada. So, yes, it's opened a lot of doors to take the gospel into places that actually don't have much in the way of active evangelical churches, and so it's been a real thrill to be able to do that in a lot of places. And with the other languages coming on board now, Korean, Japanese, Indonesian, Chinese, it looks like it's going to open up the other side of the world too. So it's very exciting, also very overwhelming, but I just take it a day at a time. That's all we've got. You know, I was a preacher on his way to church when the truck hit me. And it reminded me, as if I needed reminding, that we live on the edge. You know, any day could be our last day, and we ought to squeeze the tube. You know, make them all count.
I'm often reminded of that old saying that between man's plan in time and God's plan in eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference.
Wonderful, absolutely wonderful. Well said.
And of course, really, you see in the. Really, your impact on other people's lives. But I think we'd all like have an opportunity to do it too, but I sure wouldn't want to have to go through with what you went through.
I said a lot of times, people say, well, I really liked your book. And I said, well, I don't recommend getting hit by a truck so you can write one. But, you know, if you do have a great a sadness or a loss or a tragedy, it probably ought to do something that's worth talking about. It ought to do, if you make it through to the other side, and that, I think that's what God would have for us to do, we ought to give him the glory and help other people do the same thing.
Amen to that. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you'd like to ask Don a question, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we're just about out of time, but our guest has been Don Piper. His book, 90 Minutes in Heaven, a book that I promise you, when you read it, will really transform your life in many ways. It's one of those unforgettable books that we're carrying along. We carry Corey Ten Boom's book, and we're recommending for people just to prepare themselves spiritually for what I believe is going to lie ahead for many of us. Well, basically, what message would you like to leave with our listeners this evening, Tom?
Well, I would like people to know that God answers prayer. I'm a living testimony to answered prayer. Literally, untold numbers of people prayed that day that I would live, and God said yes. Sometimes the answer to prayers is no, but God is faithful to answer prayers. The Bible says we have not because we ask not. So I would tell them God answers prayer. Keep praying. I would say God's still in the miracle business because I'm a miracle. I would also say that you can find a new normal on the other side of tragedy and loss. And I would also say heaven is real, and Jesus is the way to heaven. He said he was. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man goes into the Father except through me. So if I don't get to see him here on this side of the gate, I hope to see him up there.
All right, hold on. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, Don's been kind enough to come on with us the second time for a different audience. We hope for one time we'll get him on with the other audiences. As you know, we do 4 hours of four different audiences every week. But I felt that this was such an important message to get out, and Don's over in Hawaii. Would you be giving a talk this evening over there? You're going to have the
Actually, my first speaking engagement is Good Friday at a church called Mountain View Community Church in Kaneohe. And then I'll be at Hope Chapel in Honolulu on Saturday night and back at the Mountain View Church for a couple of Easter Sunday morning services. And then I'll be back on the Big Island on Monday night.
Now, what island are you on now?
I'm on Oahu.
All right, fine, because we do actually have listeners over there. In fact, we have listeners all across the country. But I know we have a fair number of people who monitor our programs from Honolulu And so hopefully some of them will get a chance to get to actually hear Don Piper when he's
I would love to meet them, or anywhere, really, that we're able to get together. I enjoy meeting people on this side of glory that I'm going to spend eternity with on the other side.
Right, and of course, certainly, if you'd be interested in having Don come to your church, you would contact him. Let's get that telephone number and website out just one more time.
Sure, the website is donpiperministries.com. And there is a place on there that says Contact Don or Speaking Engagements, and you could just check on that. And then the office number is 281-991-1331, 281-991-1331. And as I said, I love meeting people in person here on Earth because, you know, we don't get to stay very long here. But I like to meet them here before I get to see them up there. And we're trying to take as many with us as we can. Heaven is real, and we want to make sure that people get there.
Amen to that. Well, God bless you. Thank you so
very much
for being with us.
Very honored to be with you today.
Bye-bye. All right. Well, of course, that's Don Piper, and it's a fascinating story, a fascinating book, and we certainly recommend it to it. Of course, if you're interested in getting the book, learning how to get the book, why, you can always give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And we actually decided to carry this book because we think that, especially at this time in history, people need to begin to understand that there may be difficult times that lie ahead. But, of course, God is going to see us through if it's his plan. If it's not his plan, we're going to perish. But if once you accept that really our life is not in our hands, but that our life is in God's hands, then, of course, it's much easier to accept what lies ahead, and this book will help you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and, of course, this is the time when I need to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're dependent on those of you who listen to our programs to help us. And if you agree with our message, and as you know, we reach out across America to about 60 outlets every week. What a unique opportunity through the miracle of radio and shortwave and internet and the satellite now on Telstar 5. And you can actually hear us there 9 hours a day. Of course, you won't even have time to get anything accomplished. But we actually do have some people who listen for 2 or 3 or 4 hours a day. We try to bring you the information we think will help you prepare for the difficult times that lie ahead, and will help you to educate others about what's going on. And we've decided to carry Don Piper's book, 90 Minutes in Heaven. Now, if you'd like to get the tape of this conversation or, of course, our previous conversation, you can get either one or both of them. And we do talk through some of the breaks that you may hear if you're on a commercial radio station. But the book or the audio tape are available by giving us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we hope, of course, that you will be able to utilize this book, and you may even want to share it with others. And, of course, the basic theme is that God allows terrible things to happen to good people, but it's for a purpose. And just as I'm firmly convinced that God is going to bring his judgment on America, but it will be for his purpose, and I think the same thing is going to be happening in Israel in the very near future, and probably in nations all throughout the world. But it probably will be the only thing that will offer people any hope for a better world and a better life, because right now, of course, we're living in a pagan world, a world that certainly does not honor God, and America doesn't honor God. And there is no way that America is ever going to be redeemed unless we turn from our wicked ways. And I see very little evidence of that at the present time. Anyway, of course, if you'd like to get the book or any of the other items we talk about, why, if you'd like more information on how to obtain them, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And we do recommend my new talk. It's called Forbidden Secret, and it's available on video. It's available on DVD. And of course, it's an important story because it will help you to understand the true nature of the spiritual battle in which we're engaged today. My talk, Brotherhood of Darkness, is still a classic, and between that and The Forbidden Secret, you will know more than most college professors. We recommend, of course, Chris Pitto's wonderful DVDs, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2. We recommend his talk on the secret mysteries of America's beginnings, and his most recent presentation, Riddles in Stone, the Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. And you may wonder what this has to do with anything. Well, you're going to have to see them to watch, find out. And then, of course, Pastor Joe Schimmel's videos on DVDs, they sold their souls for rock and roll. They sold their souls for rock and roll. And because many of the people within the music industry have actually traded their soul for fame and fortune and drugs and sex and all of these things. But there's a terrible price to pay. And you can see the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. But they all tell the same story. And when you realize this is not just in the music industry, it's in education, it's in the media. It's some of the people at the highest levels of our government and heading the largest corporations in the world today. We're involved in this spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. So please, of course, remember our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, and pray for America, pray for revival, pray for Don Piper, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until, well, tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.